All right, well, I'm Jessica McDonald, and I work for Medical Group Management Association, which represents the nation's practice managers for group health practice. And I'm not really going to talk so much about what we do at MGMA, but really how you can effectively engage your supporters and some tactics that you can use to overcome the challenges of using social media. So first here I have some statistics about three major social media services, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Mark talked about going to where the people are. Well, here's where they are. If you can see these numbers, they're overwhelming. Twitter is the smallest for number of users, but it's growing rapidly, much faster than the other services, actually. If you look at YouTube, 85% of all internet users watch videos online, and 43% of those are watching them on YouTube. So that's the place to be if you want to reach them. These are some of the benefits of social media, and I'm just going to kind of go through these fairly quickly because I think most people are aware about what's good about social media. It has a strong ability for collective action and crowdsourcing. Political campaigns are a great example of collective action using social media, as well as pressure campaigns launched by groups against organizations. For crowdsourcing is one of my favorite ways to use social media. It's often overlooked, but it can give you a wealth of information. Your users aren't just academics, researchers, and professionals, but they're laymen with a depth of insight and ideas that they can give to you. A couple of examples of how this has been used, I'm sure everybody knows about Netflix, and they ran a crowdsourcing campaign to have someone improve their suggestion algorithm, where they suggest movies to you based off what you've watched before. If you could improve the algorithm by 10%, they gave you $1 million. Now I know we work for organizations that can't really give $1 million, but people will do this for you just to be a part of something. Another example is the Australian Historic Newspapers Association, which asked the public to fix, correct, or improve their electronically translated copies of old newspapers. By March 2010, over 12 million lines of text had been improved by thousands of public users for free. So just try to keep crowdsourcing in mind as a way to expand your knowledge base and perform research that might otherwise be prohibitively expensive. Of course, we also know that it's fast, free, and flexible. It's interactive. It's much more interactive than any of the traditional forms of media. And it's viral. The fast, free, and flexible and viral can also be challenges, but let's just look at them as benefits for right now. Moving into the challenges, there's a lot of noise out there. 234 million Americans use social media. What this results in, one of my favorite examples, I bet this pickle can get 1 million fans before Nickelback. This is what you're competing against. There's all sorts of groups out there, some of them working for good and some of them just really don't like Nickelback, so they're trying to get their message out the same as everyone else. The noise can also cause a credibility gap. When you're competing with things that don't have a very transparent origin, people don't know who you are unless you put it out there. And if you're just putting out gimmicks, that just contributes to the noise and doesn't really get anybody engaged with you. There's also too many options. Many organizations rush to be in as many services as possible, and then they end up with that entire alphabet soup at the bottom of their website. This is overwhelming to both the organizations and to the individual users. No one can possibly effectively manage that many sites or assimilate that much information. One example are the three different types of pages on Facebook. You have a cause page, a group page, or a general page. Which is it? If users are having to go to all three, it can cause frustration or a belief that the group is disorganized. I've done some original research on the perceptions of users and of organizations on social media, and this is one of the biggest challenges I think that's out there. There's a disconnect between the way organizations and individuals view social media. Primarily, organizations use it as a public relations tool, and many of them are still seeing it in a one-to-many form of public relations, where they're putting out press releases or reports, and they're not really engaging the audience. On the other side of that, individuals see social media as a relationship tool. They're on there for their family and their friends and their coworkers, people that they have some sort of connection with. So if you, as an organization, want to connect with them, you have to go to the way that they're using it, which is as a relationship tool. Another challenge is expanding beyond your core group of supporters. This can be somewhat deceiving because you'll launch a Facebook page or a Twitter account and all of a sudden you have all these followers. When you investigate it a little more, you may find that those are current interns, former interns, interns' boyfriends, interns' girlfriends, interns' parents, and maybe a few donors and maybe a few community supporters. So you really want to get out there with your social media and make sure that you're not just preaching to the choir that's already got skin in your game. So this is the result of a survey that I performed as part of some research on effective use of social media for nonprofits. There was 133 self-selected participants, all users of social media. 84% were female. It is skewed, but this is in line with other social media surveys. We're not really sure why, if it's just that women tend to use social media more or if they tend to respond to surveys about social media more. 46% were between ages of 25 and 30, and you can see the top services that they were using there. These are some of the findings of this research. There was strong evidence of identity formation with online activism. So people were fanning or liking a cause on Facebook because they wanted to identify with that cause and show public support for it. Most noted social media's ability to spread information and coordinate activities. And this is an interesting statistic. 41% have recruited people from their social networks into a cause, even though an approximately equal percent said they were uncomfortable recruiting networks into a cause. So this is an area where we need to do some more research about why they feel uncomfortable and yet they're doing it anyway. Many desired more interactivity and multiple pathways of involvement. This has been a challenge for certain organizations. They tend to only ask for your networks or your wallet, and people get fatigued by that. 63% felt that online activism through social media was effective, particularly for raising awareness and visibility for a cause. The key point from this, though, is from those who did not think it was effective. And those who felt that it was not effective, the chief complaint was about slacktivism or the appearance of doing something when you're actually not. As one of my survey respondents said, that it's easy to appear involved when you don't actually have to put on pants. And the other chief complaint was about the organization's failure to publicize the offline results of online activity. People didn't know if their actions had any impact, and that discouraged them from further activity. So these are some tactics to not only help you effectively engage your supporters, but to overcome those challenges I just talked about. The first one I'm going to mention here is, it's a theory called networked activism developed by Professor Molly Land. She's a Harvard law professor, and she looked at human rights organizations and how that they were engaging their supporters. Basically, she noticed that there's a disconnect between the more professional or hierarchical an organization is and its grassroots involvement. They're inversely related. So she tried to resolve this tension. And some of the ways that she came up with it are ways that I think can really help all types of organizations. One such suggestion is to utilize small groups within a larger network. The research indicates that people are more engaged when they do it this way. When they're in a small group, a cell structure, they tend to be more active. She encouraged the organization to let the supporters take ownership of the issue by allowing them to help shape the goals and methods. This is going back to that crowdsourcing. The only issue with this is that you have to either provide a lot of guidance or none at all. There's not really any middle ground here. So you have to really jump in there and be hands-on with them or just let it go. And that kind of goes into what she was saying, but it's also just a part of social media in general. You have to learn to let go of your message. Once it gets into the hands of supporters, it's gone. And you have to learn to embrace the beast, which is why I have a picture of Beast from X-Men here. I'm definitely showing my nerdiness. It's all right. But just remember that it's not quite as scary as it seems, because you can trust your supporters. They want you to do well. However, you should also have a plan in place to react if something does go badly. Some more tactics including define your goals. It's not enough just to have those quantitative measures of fans, followers, likes, subscribers. It doesn't mean anything if that doesn't get you where you want to be. If your goal is to have people show up at a public health screening, having 50,000 likes doesn't get you there. You have to do something else. And knowing what you want out of a campaign will help you know what to put into it. Going back to Echo Professor Land, give supporters something to do. A lot of times they want to get involved, but when they just sign up for a Facebook page or a mailing list, that's the end of their involvement. The association kind of lets them sit there. And instead, you can give them certain activities and they can choose what they're most comfortable with. Attend a rally, tell five friends. Never discount the power of the personal ask. Fundraising studies show that the number one reason that people give to an organization is because someone they know asked them to, and that holds true here. If someone they know asks them to support a cause, they likely will. Interactivity. I'm going to throw a whole wall of text at you up here, and I'm not going to go through these point by point, but this was by far one of the biggest complaints of the survey with supporters, and one of the biggest challenges I think organizations have. you need to find a way to match your needs to their abilities, and it needs to go beyond just signing up or donating or asking five friends. There needs to be something else that they can do that they find meaningful. Remember that it is your job to provide supporters with a compelling reason to engage. And not every event has to be an ask. You can ask them to organize for house parties where you show a video about your cause, or you can ask them to write a petition or to write a letter to lawmakers. There's many ways that they can contribute their time and talent that doesn't involve their networks or their wallet. So here's that giant wall of text, and like I said, I'm not gonna go through all of them. These are just some suggestions of ways that you can increase interactivity on your social media services. Believe it or not, most of these are not currently being done. In the current study of over 100 international NGOs, only 13% posted volunteer opportunities on their Facebook page. Only 17% posted contact information. So some of these are kind of straightforward and common sense, but we're just not doing them. The one that I really want to harp on here is the participate yourself. This is the way that you get bloggers to pay attention to you. This is the way that you get other Twitterers to pay attention to you, the way you get people on Facebook to pay attention to you, is you have to be a part of the larger conversation. Go out to blogs and Facebook pages and YouTube channels of organizations or people involved in your work. Post on their pages. Start discussions. Listen to discussions. Go to where your audience gathers and be a part of those conversations. Not only will that help you attract supporters, but it will integrate you into the larger network. This is hitting up on that topic that I mentioned about people feeling like their work did not have meaning because the organizations did not tie the offline results to the online actions. There's an interesting statistic here where the vast majority of people were involved in both online and offline activism, but only 26% did so for the same organization. So what this tells us is that there is a huge gulf between what we ask people to do online and what we ask them to do offline. We need to narrow that gulf and work harder to more closely tie those online actions to offline results that people can feel good about. Related to that, results matter. You should celebrate your successes, but don't hide from your failures either. The absolute worst thing that you can do is leave supporters sitting there wondering what happened. If your campaign was not as successful as you'd wanted it to be, ask your supporters for feedback. What went wrong? What would they improve? What can you do better next time? And that will help you to create better campaigns, but also show your supporters that you did actually have a result. You weren't just leaving them hanging in the air. One way that you can do that to publicize results, because it's not always something flashy, but you can update them with news articles if you were covered in the traditional press, the status of a bill, if it's a bill before a lawmaking body, something like the panel will vote next week. It doesn't have to be groundbreaking, but they do need to know that their work accomplished something. Social media is really developed for this kind of interaction, and people, if they have horrendous news feeds like mine on Facebook, they will notice pictures and videos and polls much more than they will notice blocks of text. But don't forget your old media, too. You want to make sure that you can publish campaign summaries and press releases on social media outlets. This helps journalists find things that they want to know about your organization. Am I at 15 minutes? Okay, done. So that's where I'm stopping for right now, but if you have questions, I'd be happy to help to answer those.